One of my biggest pet peeves is when people are late. The only exempt is LeBron. So, like, you and I are punctual guys, and like it's tough.
The only exempt is LeBron James.
Yeah, the only exempt is LeBron James. It's fine. He gets pass. Set this time, at least be in that window.
What about AM 34?
I'd be pissed. I'd be like, "What are you doing, man? You couldn't go out last night." Like, what are you doing? Yeah. Like,
if he wins a couple chips, then he can be late. Welcome to season 2, episode 12 of Not Another Leafs Pod on the Hockey Podcast Network, at Ken Stapon, at B McCarthy 95, at Leafs Pod, B Mac. Blue and white scrimmage last night got televised on TSN, sending other fan bases into a death spiral.
What up, Kenny? You know what? I actually chose that.
What up, B-Man?
I actually chose that scrimmage over the NFL. I was like, you know what? I'd actually rather watch this. And even though it was a scrimmage, I'm choosing that over Tom Brady.
Washington football team?
Yes. But
I think they might have covered the spread, though. I think the spread was 8.5 points. And I think the Washington football team lost by 8. I can't confirm or deny that. But if that is the case, congrats to anybody that took the Washington football team against the spread, because big cover for the Washington football team.
I know we can't delve too much into it because it ultimately is a scrimmage.
We can do whatever we want.
I guess we can. Yeah, team white versus team blue. I thought it was ultimately a high energy competitive scrimmage, and it was kind of fun how they did shootouts at the end of each period and then an overtime to finish it off. I believe our boy Ilya Mikheyev potted the overtime winner, even though it was 6-3 team white all over the place. The two things that stand out, though, the shootouts, like 4 or 5 of the Leafs top guns all whiffed.
Yeah. And I think Lance Hornby had an article in the Star this morning, or in the Toronto Sun rather. I believe he said that they went so something to the tune of 2 for 14, like as ridiculous. A team in the shootout.
Ridiculous. I think that is something where you have to master in scrimmage, and it sure, have a laugh, you whiffed on it, but that could easily happen in a game. And I believe Joe Bowen was saying in the broadcast, Jason Spezza 27 for 55 in his career in the shootout, and he just whiffed on it. I don't know why all these guys now in the NHL have to just do the big leg, slowly make your way to the net, try a deke. Like, I think more guys should just jet down center ice and just shoot it, man.
Just come down straight down the slot and just rip a slap shot from...
That's what Mikko Lehtonen
right
did.
Right above the hash marks.
Yeah, just pull his Daniel Char and just unload with a high clapper. Go
like
top
that.
Right. Why not? You got to see it more.
No, I do tend to agree with you. And as far as the shootout's concerned, I think it's early on in the season. Obviously, it's a scrimmage, so not something that we should be overly concerned with yet. But when it comes down to these playoff races at the end of the year, oftentimes the margins end up being, you know, 2 points, 1 point, 3 points, and the difference in your seeding. And
right,
we saw what happened with the seeding for the Toronto Maple Leafs this year, where they end up with a tough matchup in the play-in round against the Columbus Blue Jackets. If you're able to stash a couple more points, you're a little bit higher, you get a more favorable matchup in the first round. If the Maple Leafs aren't able to figure out how to be more effective in the shootout, then it could certainly hinder their playoff position and get them a less desirable matchup heading into the first round. This is something that they've struggled with in the past too. I believe it was 2 or 3 years ago. They had one of the worst records in the league. I think it might've been actually last in the league.
It's astonishing, man. You think they'd have the skill to rip one when they're in alone, not being contested at all. But the other thing too, I found is, why aren't they just breaking up the Leafs into 1A and 1B and having the 1B have an intense scrimmage? Because we know what to expect from Matthews, Nylander, Marner, and Tavares. Why aren't they just separating the B player guys and have them do a big scrimmage? So there's a lot of bubble players who may have looked good in the scrimmage. Like I liked what Nick Petan was bringing, Barabanov, Joey
Robertson.
But again,
nice blast from the point.
Again, great to see. And I think it would have benefited the Leafs if they just did a separate scrimmage and just let the A guys, if you will, just chill and take the night off and maybe watch, because Keefe is expecting these guys to be roaring out of the gates as soon as puck drop hits on Jan 13. And I get scrimmage is a good simulation of what you're going to expect in the game. But at this point, we want to, if you're coaching staff, you just want to see, okay, who do I like and who can I slide in for a bottom six role, right? I don't think it makes sense for the A players to participate. quite frankly.
Well, is it fair to say that the top nine for the Leafs are solidified?
Yeah.
Like, you're going to be Thornton, Matthews, Marner. You're looking at, well, VC, maybe he could get moved out and somebody else could slot in there, but it's likely going to be VC, Tavares, Nylander. Then the third line, once Kerfoot comes back from injury, it's going to be Kerfoot, Hyman, Mikheyev. So really the only place where there is some room for players to come in and slot in is the fourth line. And certainly you expect Jason Spezza is probably going to be centering that. You expect Wayne Simmonds to be one of the wingers. So really that only leaves one slot open for all the rest of the depth forward. So I certainly understand what you're saying, but I think essentially for the top 12 for this team, they basically have it penciled in at this point, outside of maybe one or two spots at the bottom of the roster. Also with no preseason games or no exhibition games against other teams, all these organizations are scrambling, trying to figure out ways to get sort of a competitive match in, get a competitive game in. And if that's an inter-squad scrimmage, obviously you need X amount of players to play in a scrimmage. Like, well, you need at least probably two pairs of D and three lines on each team for there to, so that everybody just isn't skating around completely gassed. So from that sense, you need to use the top guys. Obviously, you know that Matthews and Marner and Tavares, who all found the score sheet in the game last night, by the way, so that was nice to see, are going to dominate in this sort of exhibition fashion, especially against lesser opposition. Like, I believe Mitch Marner went top cheese on Aaron Dell. Like, that's the third goalie in the depth chart. So say what you want about that, but I'm not overly impressed with Marner scoring on basically an AHL level goalie.
Right.
But these organizations are just trying to figure out any way to get a competitive edge before they have to dive right into games that actually matter. And for the Maple Leafs, it's against a heated rival. Like, their first competitive matchup is going to be against Montreal. And it's been well documented how difficult that team's going to play against after the roster adjustments that they made this season.
Right. And it's also well documented how efficient Montreal has been in season openers against the Leafs. I mean, each year, Kenny, it always seems like they keep it tight. It goes to overtime and they're just running around and grinding the Leafs into the ice. So it's going to be a fantastic original six matchup like it always is. But again, just to close out on that scrimmage point, everyone's talking like, oh, JT looks in mid-season form. It's like, well, yeah, he's playing against like,
yeah, he's on the come ice on, against, it's like Barabanov or whoever.
It's like, oh, like Nylander, two snipes. Like, come on. He looks great. He's going to have a career year. It's like, it's a scrimmage. Like, we expect it from these
Somebody
guys.
Was asking Keith post-game about the chemistry between Lehtinen and Nylander. Oh, yeah, there's a pretty good chemistry between these two players. What can we expect moving into the season? Keith is just sitting there like, I think it's a little bit early to be talking about line chemistry between a defenseman and a winger. But he did have the feed on Nylander's one timer, which was a good shot, like impressive shot. And then he also had on Nylander's second goal, it was a deflection on a point shot from Lehtinen. So the two did combine again for a couple, and you like to see it. I think that Lehtinen looks like or seems to be adjusting well to the smaller ice surface and the speed of the NHL game. So it remains to be seen how he plays on Wednesday, really, and moving forward.
Exactly. But it's like, okay, yeah, great, Lehtinen, you look good, but how are you going to look when you're trying to go back and retrieve the puck and Brendan Gallagher's on your ass, you know?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
It's, just, it's a different feel, so.
And everybody piling on
more days, man.
As well. Like, from what I saw on Leafs Twitter, everybody's saying, what the hell is this guy doing? Like, Wayne Simmonds is not going to be effective in a game of shinny against his own team. That's
no
not
way.
His style of play. Do you understand how much trouble he would get in if he just absolutely went into the corner and just
rocked
body
everybody?
Mitch Marner, and then like Marner is out for, you know, a week or something because like Simmonds just took him out in the corner. Obviously his style of play is not going to be effective until the regular season starts, and well, I'll reserve my judgment for that player in particular until that time.
No, that's fair. It got a little chippy at points. I remember Matthews and Engvall were going at it and pretty similar size. And I think the one guy that has the best chance to crack the roster or crack the bottom six is Pierre Engvall. And Sheldon Keefe has been high on this guy. He was singing his praises last night and he really wants him to succeed. And remember, Keefe goes way back with Engvall, winning a Calder Cup with the Marlies in 2018. Original draft pick from the Leafs. It's been groomed in the organization, and now Keefe is hoping he can get a shot in the top, in the bottom six.
So just to round out the stat sheets, which by the way, I don't know, silly, is that a word? I was being silly this morning
facility
and trying to find a box score anywhere and everywhere for the scrimmage so I could get all the statistics. I probably looked on Twitter for about 20 minutes and I was like, all right, this thing doesn't exist. Wishful thinking, but I figured, you know, the TSN broadcast of the scrimmage, maybe there's a box score out there. But so I don't really know who got all the primary assists offhand, but two goals for Nylander, both assisted by Lettinen. One goal for Matthews. It was the backdoor feed from Mitch Marner. Marner also had a breakaway goal on Arendelle. Tavares with the one goal in tight on Freddie. Robertson had one with the blast from the point. Ilya Mikheyev on the OT breakaway scores. And Jason Spezza had one with the rebound off the backboards. I might have missed one or two. I think that was all of them, though, as far as the Toronto Maple Leafs feed was concerned, as they were posting stories throughout the game. So we touched on the shootout concerns. Another thing that's been talked about a lot this week has been the staggering of the power play units. So Sheldon Keefe and Manny Malhotra have obviously come together and decided that rather than rolling out one top unit that last year consisted of Matthews, Marner, Nylander, Tavares, and at times Morgan Riley, at times it was Tyson Barrie. This year, it looks like they're going to try to stagger it a bit. So likely it will be Thornton, Matthews, Marner, and then on the point, Morgan Riley, and whoever will slot in on the other side, it remains to be seen. Probably maybe Wayne Simmonds has been rumored as being the net front presence on that unit. And on the second unit, it will be likely Tavares with William Nylander, Jimmy Vesey. You got to think that Lettinen will probably run the point for that one, likely. Just based off his offensive pedigree and his experience doing that over in the KHL. And then the last spot again remains to be open. You got to think maybe Jason Spezza would be a guy that might slot in there. There's a couple options that they could slot in on that second unit. Now, Leafs Nation is pretty divided on this. I threw out a poll and 60% think that it's a good idea to split up the first unit and sort of stagger the depth a little bit and the top end scoring. And 40% think it's a bad idea and that they should keep the number one unit together that they had last year that was so effective at times, but then also was only running at a 15% efficiency during the Columbus series. What's your perspective on how the Maple Leafs should make adjustments or not adjust anything to their power play units coming into this season?
I think it's important that they stagger the two PP units because, Kenny, it's the only season that they can. And really the only luxury year they can. They won't be able to do this in the future. And they've loaded and compacted all the skillful guys and their top guns on a power play unit before. We've seen it be super efficient. We've seen it collapse. And then what do you get? A decent subpar second unit that won't generate virtually anything. So they've been riding the four forwards and a defenseman for a while. It's been a common thread. And, you know, something other NHL coaches have adopted as well. And they have the luxury of rolling out two consistent PP units that really, I don't think there's a team in the league that has that luxury. Maybe Vegas or St. Louis. I think it's important that they stagger both units and not compact one unit together.
I tend to agree with you. And we saw, as I cited before, in the Columbus series, how the Maple Leafs tried to use that top heavy format and they tried to roll out the top unit and it wasn't necessarily effective. Also, the first line and the second line for the Maple Leafs weren't necessarily that effective in that series either. And that's the risk that you run as an organization when you put all your eggs into one basket, as far as a salary cap perspective is concerned, because you don't have the depth up and down your lineup. So if your big guns aren't going, you can easily run into trouble. So when you look at staggering the units, a lot of people are upset because they don't think that they think it's a waste of Tavares's talent or it's a waste of Nylander's talent, not giving them an opportunity to play on the top unit. I look at it and I think that both units stand to benefit from having another unit that's equally as talented as the first unit. You say you get the first unit out there for a minute or whatever, a minute 20, they tire out the penalty killers. Then you're able to sort of get a change while in the zone, cycling the puck. All of a sudden the second unit gets out there and the penalty killers are gassed. You have fresh legs and you can really take advantage. Also, it sort of gives you a little bit of a different look to roll out there. Maybe you have different strategies for both units. Maybe you have a little bit of a different idea of how you want to play it. So it gives other teams more to prepare for, to understand which units on the ice and how they're going to attack. Also, Manny Malhotra was brought in here as a power play specialist. So I'm going to defer to him. If there's some changes that he thinks that he can make to this unit to make it more efficient than it was last year, which it was number two in the league behind Edmonton after Sheldon Keefe took over. I'm all for it.
On the special teams note too, Kenny, it's been reported that Sheldon Keefe would like to employ Matthews on the penalty kill. And I think this will further augment Matthews' game into more defensively responsible forward. And, you know, there's been talk, a future Selke candidate in Austin Matthews, very much in the reach for number 34. And I think Keefe is putting him in a position to achieve in other aspects on the ice. And I think Matthews can be secretly a good weapon on the PK.
Matthews on the PK would certainly be a different look, and I'll defer to Sheldon Keefe. We've long been expecting him to be dominant in both areas of the ice, offensively and defensively. And the best centers in the league can both be effective on the power play and on the penalty kill. Not to mention, if he's out there with Mitch Marner, it gives Joe Thornton a little bit of a rest on the bench during the penalty kill, where he can sort of recoup those 43-year-old legs of his. And perhaps Matthews and Marner will be able to take advantage of the power play unit on the other side if they can, you know, intercept a pass and go on the attack the other way and maybe translate that into some shorthanded goals, which are always a bonus for the coaching staff.
I think the happiest player on the ice yesterday was Jumbo Joe. Looks like he's in his rookie year.
He looks so happy.
He's having a blast.
All right, let's go to around the league. Around the league, big news this week for the New York Islanders as Lou Lamoriello gets it done, signing Matt Barzal to a 3-year deal. I believe the deal is around a $7 million AAV. And the way the contract is structured, it basically goes, I believe, $4 million in the first year, $6 million in the second year, and $10 million in the third year, which is important because that means in the third year, Barzal's qualifying offer would be just around $10 million for him to stay with the Islanders. What do you think of Barzal's deal?
Such a stud. I mean, just the franchise piece of the New York Islanders, led the team in points the last three seasons. I'm sure he was sniffing for a higher AAV, but they settled at $7 million. And according to Barzal, you know, it was a pretty efficient and swift negotiation window. I believe he becomes an RFA at the end of the deal, Kenny, after 3 years.
Yeah, that's well, he's still a restricted free agent. Correct.
Right. Okay.
So it would still be the Islanders that hold his negotiating rights, which is important. The $10 million, the way the structure or the contract is structured, though, and I did just check the tweet, it's $4 million the first year, $7 million the second year, and $10 million the third year, is important because he will be eligible for arbitration at that point. So an independent adjudicator will be able to come in and help him determine his salary, and $10 million in the third year will certainly help the player in that negotiation. We threw a player poll out on Twitter. What do you think of the Barzal contract? Is it organizationally friendly, player friendly, or both parties can be happy? 40% think it helps the organization. 20% think it helps the player. 40% think that both can be happy with the new deal. Patrick Laine versus Pierre-Luc Dubois. We were having this discussion last week briefly on the pod, so I've just tossed it in as a throwaway at the end, but it got me thinking. So we also put out a poll on that. Which player would you rather have on your team? And I got to be honest, Brendan, this was a landslide one way. Which way do you think the poll went here?
Pierre-Luc Dubois, because if you want to build your team around a piece, it's got to be a centerman. But quite frankly, I don't want either, because neither want to play with their so respective tough franchises, man. So why like, good God, just especially Laine, just so mopey at media availabilities the other day, and like, act like you care and act like you want to be there. You're playing for a professional NHL franchise.
Well, center versus winger out, I figured that this would be a little bit closer. It came in at basically 84% want PLD on their team, 16% want Laine. So just a fraction of the vote from Winnipeg finding this poll and voting for Patrick Laine. He's a top end talent, potential Rocket Richard candidate if he's in form, but I'm with you. He's looked, his body language, the way he's dealt with the media of late has been questionable. And that certainly for me is a red flag. For Pierre-Luc Dubois, if I'm, for example, Stan Bowman of the Chicago Blackhawks, I would love to have Pierre-Luc Dubois on my team because it's a bigger market, bigger stage. You know, the player's going to be happy to be there. Jarmo Kekalainen obviously having difficulties based off the fact that he's in Columbus and can't get the player to sign, which, as we mentioned aforehand, is likely because he wants a bigger stage rather than playing in a smaller market, such as the second biggest city. Is it the second biggest city in Ohio? I think Cleveland's bigger.
I believe you're right, but I also believe you nailed the market and team in which he should try and pursue, and that's Chicago, because you look at it, Jonathan Toews, unfortunately missing the season due to health concerns, being in a top six center role, I think he would thrive incredibly.
Hey, it would look good. It's one of the, like, I personally love the Blackhawks uniform. I know that people are getting a little bit testy these days with like the Indian logo, and like, obviously there's like a lot of like political correctness in sports, as right. somebody who with Indigenous heritage, it's like, I like the Blackhawks uniform, but I also understand if they did feel the need to change it down the road. We won't get too far into that though. But speaking of a former Blackhawk, Corey Crawford announcing his retirement this week from the NHL. Crawford, 260 wins in his career, including two cup victories, one in 2013 and one in 2015. Crows had a really tough go over the last little while, dealing with a lot of vertigo. He's dealt, I think, about 80-something games he's missed over the last two seasons, dealing with concussion issues. He was in camp with New Jersey, or was supposed to be in camp with New Jersey this year, but he took a leave of absence from the team this week, and now he announces his retirement. What's your takeaway from Corey Crawford's very, very impressive career?
I mean, such a glorified figure in the NHL. I mean, he really dominated the 2010s as a staple NHL goaltender. And I know he had the two cups where he was a huge contributor in 2013, 2015, but also part of the organization in 2010. He was a two-time William M. Jennings Award recipient, and which effectively means if you have to play 25 games minimum and have the best goals against average. I mean, such a rock solid attendee for the Chicago Blackhawks for a decade, and hopefully he enjoys a well-deserved rest.
So the Edmonton Oilers, a lot has been made about their top-end talent, obviously, with McDavid and Draisaitl, but the big gripe against the team has been their lack of depth scoring. They're hoping to address that this season with the return of Jesse Puljujarvi, who McDavid says is expected to be a huge part of the Oilers team, likely playing on the third line alongside Kyle Turris, who's also had a real rough go since he left Ottawa, heading to Nashville. Puljujarvi was the fourth overall pick in the 2016 NHL draft. He really never established himself in Edmonton, with just 37 points in 139 games with the Oilers from 2016 to 2019 before being asked to be traded. Obviously, that didn't happen, so he buzzed over back home to Finland, where he had 53 points in 56 games playing in the top league in Finland a year ago before returning to the Oilers this year. What do you expect out of Puljujarvi adding to the Oilers' depth scoring this season?
It's an interesting conundrum, because I'm sure Oilers management were hoping for the same effect as the center forward duo materialized in Toronto with Matthews and Marner, both taken a year after each other, same with McDavid and Puljujarvi. And you'd think right away that Puljujarvi would pair really well with McDavid, but he's had stints of good production and good success in Edmonton, but my goodness, Kenny, he's going to be scratching at this point for a bottom six role, and hopefully he can provide a good depth role. But clock's ticking again. Another top 10 pick. He went fourth overall in 2016. Looking at that 2016 draft, man, like there's quite a few. I hate to use the word, but I guess we'll say potential busts.
I think Puljujarvi at this point, you could consider him a bust.
I think so.
Just if he was taken in 2016 and he's just had 37 points in the NHL in basically what should have been four NHL seasons, that's a ripe old average of less than 10 points a season, which is not good for a guy that got taken fourth overall. I'm not sure what to expect out of Puljujarvi this season. I think expecting less is probably the safer bet for Oilers fans. And I'm not sure what to expect out of his line mate, the Kyle Turris. He hasn't showed anything since he got that big contract extension in Nashville, which he got bought out of by David Poile. And then he gets shipped out to Edmonton on a lower deal. I really liked the way this player played in Ottawa prior to getting shipped to Nashville, but he just hasn't been able to figure it out since. So you got a couple of guys on that third line who are looking for their own redemption tour heading into this season. Henrik Lundqvist recovering after heart surgery, and obviously he's not going to play this year, but good news from the King, as it's been day five, I believe, since his surgery, and he announced that his recovery is going well. So some good news coming from the King after what's been a really difficult time for him and his family.
Yes, and continued prayers and thoughts go out to Hank and his family. And another glorified goaltender in the 2010s, unfortunately never got to... I mean, well, in 2014, I guess they went to the Cup Final against the Kings and lost, but so close to a Cup for Lundqvist, has about everything else on his shelf in terms of awards, but such a loss for the league. But again, continued prayers go out to King Henrik.
You said 2014, right? I believe that was the year that I was living in Ocean City, Maryland for the summer. And we got down there just in time for the Stanley Cup Final. Me and my buddy Kurt Wyszynski, we were living at his house in West Ocean City. And we built a Stanley Cup out of Natty Light cans, preparing for a New York Rangers victory, which obviously did not end up happening. But it was great to see a Northeast team playing that late into the season. He was a diehard Rangers fan, and I was pulling for them as well against the Western Conference foe.
Yeah, the Kings were just so lethal that year. I mean, they obviously were high on the Cup from 2012, and I think they took it in five, but the Rangers were able to squeak one out. And then Alec Martinez, I remember watching that. That was insane. Overtime winner to win the Cup. Like, when is that happen?
Those California teams used to just eat you alive if you got within 5 feet of the boards. They'd just chew you up and spit you out and come out with the puck. Dustin Brown, Jeff Carter, Anze Kopitar, Drew Doughty was a little bit more limber than he is these days.
Their fourth line would just dummy top-tier units. It was insane. Top to bottom, they were just relentless.
I want to zip through some COVID updates because this is going to be a running story. Now, COVID. I don't want to spend too much time on it because everybody just is inundated with this everywhere you go. It's all anybody wants to talk about, but here's how it's affecting the league. So the Stars and Panthers openers, as in their first two games, have been postponed due to COVID because six players on the Stars and two staff members of the Dallas Stars organization have tested positive for COVID. The Columbus Blue Jackets had 19 players who did not practice due to precautions this week, but 18 of those players returned to practice Saturday. So that's good news for that organization. And the Pittsburgh Penguins canceling their scrimmage on Saturday due to potential COVID concern. So this is the first real taste for the NHL of what's going to be a running story for the league this year. And as we've stated before, it's not necessarily if it's going to happen, but when it happens to these organizations, how they're able to contain it and how they're able to move, hopefully, past this fairly quickly so as not to totally disrupt the season.
Right. And, you know, if you want a good template, I think the league can look to the NFL, because how many times this year where Thursday nighter games were postponed 5-6 times. The league, the NHL, made sure that if these sorts of situations do come about, and they are, games are going to be postponed, they've left themselves enough leeway and a good window to make up for that missed play.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see, because the season is already so compressed, where they're able to squeeze in games later if they do have to make them up. The good news is that because these teams are all playing each other, there's probably potential that you could squeeze in back-to-backs a little bit later down the road. But we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. I have faith in the NHL's NHL organizations.
Jerry.
I have faith in Jerry to get these protocols in place and hopefully act quickly in efficiency if and when these COVID concerns happen. Let's move to the tweet of the day. All right, BMAC, you want to go first or you want me to go first?
I'll go first because I got a good laugh out of this. TSN TSN Leaf beat reporter Kristen Shilton tweeting, Hall and freaking out still. There's so much music in the world. Why is this happening? And then Brendan Shanahan replying with a wink and a gif that says, deal with it. It was a Jack Nicholson gif, not sure the movie. But I agree. I think they need to mix up their
I believe it's
song.
The Departed. I haven't seen right. The actual picture that you're referring to, but
you're probably right.
He's sitting in the back of the car, right?
Why don't they bring back like their early 2000s, just like staple Maple Leaf Goldhorn? You know the one.
Which one? Kerncraft 400?
Yes.
Is that what it's called? Isn't that the Boston Bruins
Goldhorn? No, it's like, it's a different tone.
Zombie Nation.
I think they should bring that back or just mix it up. Like, I like Hall & Oates, but my God, it's a little... It's a little much. You go a little stir crazy when you hear it that much. I'm sure the players want to mix it up too.
Sometimes when I need to get hyped on my way to work, I'll throw on the Zombie Nation.
Oh,
Zombie Nation. Yeah,
it's great.
Crowd remix on YouTube. It's not on any of the streaming services. So I have to stream the video on YouTube, which is always a bummer. Because if you ever close the screen on your phone, the music stops and then you get, you know, just super bummed out. But yeah, an all-time great goal tune. My tweet is actually from, 2021 angry at but it says Tony D'Angelo now has more Twitter deactivations than he has playoff points. So Tony D, obviously this week, Maple Leafs Twitter loves to pile on this guy because of his conservative political views and just his overall demeanor on Twitter. I think he sort of incites people to try to cancel him oftentimes. And with the fearless leader in the South getting his Twitter deactivated this week, that spurred Tony D to deactivate his Twitter, which is one Twitter deactivation as opposed to zero playoff points for Tony D'Angelo. So hopefully with the Rangers moving into the postseason this year, he'll look to improve upon what's been a lackluster playoff career to this point in his NHL playing days.
I'm just looking at this Twitter handle, 2021 Angie. They didn't even spell angry right.
Angie. And then I didn't even catch that. 2021 Angie.
And then at you-hee-ha. Great stuff from you-hee-ha. My God, yeah, that's hilarious. That just made my day.
Yeah, the feed itself can make the day. This segment's going to be around today because I feel like it's unlimited fodder heading into the NHL season when you get especially when you get the angry Leaf fans just on like the burner with 12 numbers after the name, just absolutely teeing off on Kyle Dubas.
Yeah.
Oh man. But you got your NHL fantasy draft coming up a little bit later, so we're going to have to get out of here shortly. Yes. Who are you targeting? I believe you have the first overall pick, so congratulations there.
I'm pretty stoked. It's going to be a certain player in oil country.
Tyson Berry?
I was thinking Puljujärvi, but we'll see.
Yeah. I think it's a safe pick. Thanks for listening to this episode of Leafs Pod. Follow us on Twitter, @LeafsPod, @KenSafeOn, @BMcCarthy95. We'll catch you next time.